Okay. Our lesson tonight is a continuation from last week. Last week we began studying about the benefits of fearing God. And that's sort of a strange concept at first. As I mentioned last time, I heard a man, as he was preaching, just kind of mentioned that as an aside that would be a good study for you to do. So I began studying that. And I found out that there are lots and lots of benefits to fearing God. Last time we talked about what it means to fear God. And to fear God means to show Him respect and awe and reverence and to actually be afraid, to fear. A fear that would cause us to tremble in His presence. If we're going to live our lives the way that God expects us to, we need to have a proper fear of Him and of the consequences of doing things that He doesn't want us to do and of not doing things that He wants us to do. That is a real part of what it's all about. And last time, we went through several of the benefits. And just kind of the way they've fallen out as I've worked through them is that the benefits we looked at last time are more of the internal benefits, kind of the emotional benefits or the benefits that are within us that we have. And the sorts of things that we talked about was, first two benefits was that it prevents some things. The fear of the Lord will prevent us from sin and evil, because the scripture says the fear of the Lord is clean and it has a cleansing effect on us. If we fear Him rightly, it will prevent us from committing sins. And when we consider doing a sin, the fear of Him will prevent us from doing it. The second thing that we saw that it prevents us of is oppressing people. The scriptures say that we're not to be oppressive to other people, and if we rightly fear God, then we will not oppress them, whether it is by lording over them, or whether it is through taking advantage of them by charging interest for somebody that needs help. We give them some money and we charge them interest for it. Instead of giving, the scripture says in the New Testament that if somebody asks us, we are to loan it to them, not even expecting anything in return, much less charging interest on top of that. And then we saw a lot of emotional benefits. One of them was wellness, having a well-pleasing life, having our desires fulfilled, being satisfied with our life, having a good, prosperous, blessed life, having a long life. Fearing the Lord actually increases the longevity of our life. Having an abundant life, having life flow out of us, a fountain of life, just like Jesus said in the New Testament, that if we believe on Him, that a river of living water would flow out of us. And lastly, peace. And if we fear Him, we'll have peace in our lives because we won't be afraid of the things that would happen if we did not obey Him. So when we looked at those things, you see, that's a pretty impressive list of things. The thing that kind of came to my mind was Family Feud. I've probably seen that show before. I'm old enough that I have no idea who the new person is. Richard Dawson is still the MC of the Family Feud in my mind. And he always will be. I have no idea who does it now. But Richard Dawson is the Family Feud guy. And they would survey 100 people and ask them a question. And then you're supposed to guess the answers that people gave. And I could see a question being, 100 people were surveyed and asked, how can you have wellness, have all your desires fulfilled, have satisfaction, prosperity, a long life, an abundant, full life, and peace in your life? How do you think people come by having those things? And I'm standing there and he says, Anthony, how do you think that is? What's your answer? And I say, fear God. And he gives me this weird look, right? And the audience kind of laughs. Ha ha, that's a crazy answer. And he turns around. All right, 100 people surveyed. How many people said, fear God? Big red X. Nobody, right? Nobody would give that answer, right? But that is an appropriate answer. That is an excellent answer. If we want to have all these kinds of things in our life, we need to fear Him. And be in awe of Him, in reverence and respect of Him. That attitude is what produces these kinds of things in us. And they're wonderful things. They're all the things that we want. It's the things that the world wants. That's what they're after. That's what we all want to have in this life. And the best way to get it is to have a very healthy fear of God. This is actually going to be three lessons. Tonight's lesson, we're going to look at benefits that have to do with how God responds to those who fear Him. How God responds to those who fear Him. And it's really some interesting things. So let's start in Psalm 147. Psalm 147. Psalm 147 and verse 11. It says, "The Lord takes pleasure in those who fear Him." The Lord takes pleasure in those who fear Him. This word here, pleasure, also means delight. It also means that He is pleased by it. So when we fear the Lord, we give Him pleasure. That's a pretty cool thing. You know, how can you give God pleasure and delight? Well, the way that we can give God pleasure and delight is to rightly fear Him. To see Him for who He is and give Him the awe and respect and fear that He deserves. And that gives Him pleasure. It pleases Him well. And He is pleased with the people who fear Him. So if you want to please Him and have Him to be pleased with you, the best way to do that is to fear Him. Next, turn to Isaiah 33. Isaiah chapter 33, verse 6. "Wisdom and knowledge will be the stability of your times and the strength of salvation. The fear of the Lord is His treasure." The fear of the Lord is His treasure. There's two ways this could be translated or interpreted. Some people interpret it that by fearing the Lord, it's our treasure. That's where we get treasure from. If we fear the Lord, then we will have wisdom and knowledge, stability and salvation. The other way to translate it or to interpret it is the fear of the Lord is His treasure. So us fearing Him is a treasure to God. And that's what I think that it means. When we fear Him, that is His treasure. He treasures that. That's a precious thing to Him. That is as precious to Him as rare jewels are to us. As gold and silver and precious stones. It's very, very precious to Him. It's something that He sees as very valuable and important and worthwhile. He treasures our fear. Next, turn to Psalm 33. Psalm 33. Beginning in verse 18. "Behold, the eye of the Lord is on those who fear Him, on those who hope in His mercy, to deliver their soul from death and to keep them alive from famine." The Lord's eye is on those who fear Him. The Lord watches out for us if we fear Him. That doesn't mean that he doesn't know what's going on everywhere else in the world, but he watches especially after those who fear him. He is watching very, very closely what's going on in our lives if we fear him. And he will deliver us from all kinds of problems. So we give him pleasure when we fear him. He treasures our fear, our awe, and our respect of him. And he watches out for us. He watches out for everything that's going on. He pays special attention to us if we will approach him with that attitude. He watches us very, very closely. Not only does he watch us, but turn to Malachi chapter 3. Malachi is the last book before Matthew. So it's the last book in the Old Testament. Malachi chapter 3, verse 16. Then those who feared the Lord spoke to one another, and the Lord listened and heard them. So a book of remembrance was written before him for those who fear the Lord and who meditate on his name. So the Lord especially listens to those who fear him. He listens to us. He listens to what we say to him. He even listens to what we say to each other. He listens to us and he pays attention and he responds to the things that we say. Another translation says it this way. Then those who feared the Lord spoke with each other, and the Lord listened to what they said. He just listens to the things that we say very closely if we fear him. Turn to Psalm 145. And hold your place there if you hadn't already lost it in Malachi. Probably said that too late, didn't I? Yeah. Well, we'll get back to it in a second. Psalm 145, verse 19. He will fulfill the desire of those who fear him. He also will hear their cry and save them. So God listens to us very closely if we fear him. He listens to the conversations that we have to each other. He listens to the things that we say to him. And he listens to us crying out in a time of need. You know, there are situations where people will cry out to the Lord and he will ignore them. But if we fear the Lord and we call out to him, he will always hear us. He's listening very closely. He pays very close attention to those who fear him. Now back in Malachi chapter 3, this is really interesting here. God takes pleasure and delight in us fearing him. He's very much pleased with us if we have that attitude. He treasures that. To him, that is a treasure. And he loves that. And if you take that and put it together, that he treasures our fear for him, along with what Jesus said in the Old Testament of where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. If that same rule applies to God, because he treasures our fear, when we fear him, he loves us very dearly. That's where his love is. He watches out for us. He listens to the things that we have to say. And as a result of listening to what's being said, in Malachi 3:16, it says, then those who feared the Lord spoke to one another, and the Lord listened and heard them. So a book of remembrance was written before him for those who fear the Lord and who meditate on his name. That's kind of an odd thing. It's kind of weird. But God, for those of us who fear him, he listens to what we say. He listens to us very closely. And then he takes our names because we fear him, and he has those who are before him, assuming the angels, to write down our names in a book for him because we fear him. And it is a book of remembrance. It is a book that he will not forget who we are because we fear him. Now, I'm not really sure why he has them write them down, because he can remember them no matter what. But what he's making a point of there is that he especially wants to remember those who fear him. And he makes special note of who they are and even writes their names in a book. In another translation, it says, "In his presence, a scroll of remembrance is written to record the names of those who feared him and always thought about the honor of his name." So that's an important part of fearing him. When we fear him, we are very concerned about his honor, about his name. And we think about that a lot. In the New King James, it says, "Those who meditate on his name." And when we're that kind of person who fears him and thinks about him and has the awe and respect that we should have, and we're constantly thinking about how is this going to affect God and his name, that means a whole lot to him, so much so that he writes our names down especially to keep up with them. Turn to Psalm chapter 60. Psalm 60. Psalm 60, verse 4. Psalm 60, 60, verse 4. "You have given a banner to those who fear you, that it may be displayed because of the truth." What are we talking about here? What's a banner? The Lord has given a banner to those who fear them. Fear him. What does he mean by a banner?
Hanging sign.
Yeah, it'd be some sort of hanging sign. It could be a flag, or it could be a sign between a couple of poles. It's some sort of thing that represents something. So in our case, like one of the most famous pictures of American things, like a banner, is on Iwo Jima, I believe it is, where they're putting up the flag in the rocks there. That flag is a banner. And you know, and in battle, oftentimes the flag would be what people would rally around. It was coming down, they was getting beat, and they would rally around the flag and fight for that flag, that it would not be taken down. Or when they win a fight, like in that case, they put up the flag and put up that banner for everyone to rally around, and for their enemies to fear. Right? That's what is being talked about here. This banner is the banner that a king or a leader of an army would put up to symbolize their army and the strength of their army. And when the enemies would see that banner, they would be afraid. And when the people in his army would see him coming to, you know, this area is having difficulty fighting, and this leader comes up and he's got his banner, and they see it, they rally to that banner, and then they fight even harder. And they feel more secure because of it. That is the idea here. That what God does is he rallies to those who fear him. And he raises his banner for us to see it and to come to that and to take heart, because he has come to our aid to help us. It's displayed to show the truth of who he is and who our God is that we fear. So that's the idea here. That he comes to us and comes to our aid and helps us. In verse 5 it says, "That your beloved may be delivered, save with your right hand and hear me." That's that whole idea of coming to our deliverance and raising his banner. And when we see his banner, we take heart. And those who fear him are the ones that he comes to with his banner to protect and defend and provide for. Next, turn to Psalm 61. Psalm 61. I guess we're already there, huh? Just probably turn the page. Psalm 61, verse 5. Psalm 61, verse 5. "For you, O God, have heard my vows. You have given me the heritage of those who fear your name. Another translation translates it, you have given me an inheritance reserved for those who fear your name. God has a special heritage or inheritance for those who fear him. If we fear him, he has special provisions for us that he will give us. So we see, by fearing the Lord takes very, very special care with us. He's very pleased with our fear of him, with that awe and respect and trembling in his presence, and not wanting to disappoint him and not wanting to sin against him. He takes great delight in that. He's pleased with us and he treasures it. To him, that's a very precious and special thing. And he watches out for us constantly, very closely, even more closely than those who don't. He listens to us and he hears what we say and what we need, and when we cry out to him, and he saves us. He writes it down. He writes down our names. Because we fear him, he has people that are before him, angels that are before him, that have a book, and their job is to write down our names in his book if we fear him. He has a banner, a flag, that he flies, and he comes to our rescue and to our aid, and he brings that banner, and we see it, and we rally to him. He has an inheritance or a heritage for us that fear him. And the last thing we're going to look at is in Psalm 25. Psalm 25. This one is really neat. Psalm 25, verse 14. The secret of the Lord is with those who fear him, and he will show them his covenant. The secret of the Lord is with those who fear him, and he will show them his covenant. This word here, secret, is a really rich word. It also means intimate friendship. It's the kind of friendship that you tell your secrets to, right? You don't tell your secrets to just anybody. There's usually only one or two, maybe three people that you'll tell your secrets to. Everybody else, you don't tell those to. And that's what he's saying here. He says, the people that fear me, I have such an intimate relationship with them that I tell them all my secrets. Even things that I don't tell everybody else. This word also means secret counsels. So my secret ideas and the secret things that I'm working on that nobody else knows about, he tells those things to those who fear him. He has these very intimate and familiar conversations with people who fear him. He confides in them. He puts his confidence in them to tell them about things that he can't trust other people with, because he knows what they'll do because they fear him. It's interesting, this word literally means a couch or a cushion or a triclinium. Who can tell me what a triclinium is? I had no idea what a triclinium was. Never even heard of it before. So if you're familiar with the way Eastern society worked, when they would have a meal together, they would generally recline. So they didn't have tall tables like we have where they would sit at chairs. They had really low tables. And they would lay down oftentimes with their feet away from the table and recline and reach up and eat off the table. That's what this word means. This meal that you would have with your intimate friends. And it's a small intimate group. That word triclinium means a group of three. And the way that would work would be is that they would have a small table in the middle. And they would have one set of cushions here. So one person would lay down on their left side and eat off that table. And then right at that person's head, there would be another person laying this way. And they would lay on their left side and eat off the same table. Then they would have a third person that was laying facing this way, and they would lay down and eat off that table. So you got on three sides of this table, you got people laying there right close to each other, eating a meal together and talking. The fourth side of the table would be open, and that's where the cooks would come in and keep putting food and drink and things on the table for them. And those three would have a very intimate meal together, talk about things, share secrets with one another that other people wouldn't know. And they would talk about these things together and eat a meal. Now, the other important word in this verse is that he will show them his covenant. He tells those who fear him his secrets, his intimate things. He confides in them the things that he doesn't trust other people with, his secret counsels. He does it in a very intimate situation, eating with two or three people together, a very intimate meal, right close to each other. And he shows them his covenant. So this word covenant is one that we see all throughout the scriptures. And it's one of those kinds of words that you hear about all your life, but you're not really sure what it means exactly. You know, it means an agreement of some sort, kind of like a contract. But when they talked about covenants, the word covenant literally means to cut something in two. So a covenant will often be a very formal covenant. They will cut an animal in two, and the two people making the covenant will pass between the parts of the animal. We're not going to look at it, but that's what God did with Abraham. When he made that covenant with Abraham, he cut these animals in two. And then God, usually both people will walk through to make the covenant work. God put Abraham into a deep sleep, and he walked through the covenant by himself, saying, I will make this covenant happen. So there's that idea for very serious covenants. And then there are less serious covenants, agreements that we come to just about day-to-day things. And what we would do is we would cut food together and talk over a meal and come to an agreement about come to terms about what this agreement was about. So what you have here is this idea of people, very intimate relationships, together, eating a meal together, coming to an agreement on what is expected of each other. And that's what God does with those who fear him. He tells us his secret things. He confides in us his secret counsels, the things that he's doing that he doesn't tell other people about, in a very intimate way. And he communicates to us in that very intimate way what he expects of us, what he expects us to do because of the agreement that we have with one another for salvation. He communicates that to us. He did the very formal thing with Jesus, right? Jesus took and he broke bread. He said, this is my body broken for you. And then they drank the wine. He said, this is the new covenant in my blood. That same covenant idea there, breaking something and eating together. It's the same idea as what we see here. He has this very intimate relationship with those who fear him. And he communicates to us. He communicates to us what we need to do in response to our fear of him. How we need to serve him, the things that he wants us to do each and every day in a very intimate way. So if we fear God, we get all these benefits we talked about last time, all these emotional benefits. Wellness, our desires taken care of, satisfaction, prosperity, a long life, abundant life, peace. And then this week we see, not only that, but we get an especially intimate relationship with our God when we fear him as we should. He is very much pleased and delights and receives pleasure from our fear of him. He treasures it as the most precious thing that he has. He watches over us very closely. He listens to everything we say. He writes down our names to make sure that he remembers all the things that he's done and committed to us. He has a banner that he flies especially for us when he comes to our rescue. He has a heritage and inheritance for us, and he tells us his secrets. He tells us the important things that he can only confide in the people who fear him. Wow, I want that, right? I mean, that's good stuff. We talked about last time, how do you get it? How do we learn how to fear Him rightly? How do we become a person who fears God in such a way that these things happen to us? Last time we looked at Psalm 86:11, where He says, "Teach me Thy way, O Lord, and I will walk in Thy truth. Unite my heart to fear Thy name." So it all begins with Him teaching us. He has to teach us His way. And in order for Him to do that, we have to be committed to walk in it if He'll show us. And if we will do that and ask Him, He will give us focus on that. He will unite our heart to fear His name. He will cause us to focus on Him and see Him for who He is and rightly fear Him and begin to experience these things. Then we looked in Psalm 119 and we saw there that we need to be devoted to His fear. And if we will do that, then He will establish His word in us and make us understand what He wants. And then we're to make companions of people who fear Him also. And this week, let's turn to Proverbs chapter 2 and look at another verse that helps us understand how we come to this fear. Proverbs chapter 2, verse 3. Yes, and if you cry out for discernment and lift up your voice for understanding, if you seek her as silver and search for her as for hidden treasures, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. King James says, "Yea, if thou criest after knowledge and liftest up thy voice for understanding." If we will cry out and ask God to give us knowledge and discernment and understanding, that means we got to want it really bad. We got to want it so bad that we cry out to Him and say, "Lord, please, please give me knowledge and understanding of who You are." And we've got to seek after it. That means we've got to actively search for it. It says, seek after these things like we're looking for silver. To search for it as if we're trying to find a hidden treasure that somebody has given us a treasure map for and we're looking for it. That's how much we've got to want it and desire it and go after it. And if we will do that, then we will begin to understand the fear of the Lord, because He will give it to us if we want it that bad. He'll teach us what it is. He'll show it to us. He'll reveal Himself to us. He'll help us to see Him high and lifted up and exalted so that we can learn to fear Him and then gain all of these benefits that we've been talking about.